7 minutes after 11 o'clock, this being midweek, of course, it is time for World of Work. And this week, we're going to be talking about absenteeism. I wonder whether you understand in labor law what that means. And if you are someone who's prone to coming up with excuses to slow down how much you are working at work, even if you are physically on the premises, or the person who perhaps this morning thought, "Ish, maybe I'm just going to call in sick." Well, be careful, because there may be legitimate grounds in law for you to be disciplined in some form or other. Any questions you have, give us a call over the next 30 minutes or so. Maybe you're involved in a really tough issue. You can call in as part of, I don't know, HR, a boss, someone employing people, or perhaps you are in trouble at work and there's contestation and you're not quite sure whether you're on the right side of labor law on this matter. 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg and in Cape Town, 021-446-0567. Someone who's absent from work, I'm not sure whether he got permission to be here, is Neil Searle. But I guess when you are a partner, you give yourself permission, possibly, unless there's a hierarchy, partner and then director and what have you. And he, of course, is from Fesken. At some point, either we're going to have to pay Fesken or they will have to pay us in this mutually beneficial relationship. We have so many of the experts there coming on the show, but they are absolutely invaluable in giving you practical advice. Neil, good morning to you, and thank you so much for coming into studio.
Good morning, UCBS, and good morning to your listeners. As far as my permission to be is concerned, I've always been told it's better to ask for forgiveness than for that permission.
I was about to ask. Now, I didn't realize that absenteeism, at least theoretically, and I wonder how practical this will be for many of our listeners, is actually really, really fascinating, because in my mind, absenteeism means taking off a full day from work and probably without the requisite permission. What is the full spectrum of absenteeism?
Well, it's absolutely a multifaceted issue. It starts with the employee's fundamental duty to tender their services, and that means that you're expected to be at work during working hours, unless you have an adequate reason not to be there. So linked to that, you've got the situation that you just spoke of, where someone doesn't come to the workplace at all while they're required to be there. You also have late coming when you come to the workplace, but you come later than you're supposed to. And then you also have a situation where I come to work, but I leave my workstation without authorization during the day. And then on top of all of that, this gets lumped under the same broad banner of absenteeism. You have abscondment and desertion. I imagine we'll touch on those a bit later, but that's a situation where the employee leaves work and is absent for a period of time, or intimates in one way or another something to give you the reasonable impression as the employer that you have no intention to return to work. And obviously, there are different ways of addressing each different type of absenteeism.
And who decides which of those different yardsticks to use? Should it be specified up front contractually, or is this like common law stuff? Where do we go? So, for example, I don't know. I mean, it's easier to take examples from one's own experience, right? My bosses will not be very proud of me if using myself as an example here, but I don't even know what my own contract says. What does yours say? How many hours? Do you have hours specified in your contract, Abel? I don't know whether I do. But look, my first job I had in Joburg in 2008, when I came back from the UK, that specified that I must be at work from 8 until 4. Now, I happened to work for a company that actually they treat us like slaves, and so actually I worked more hours than that. Yeah. But if my contract doesn't specify hours, then who decides what is late coming?
Yeah, well, exactly. So ultimately, the obligation rests on the employer to set the standard about when you're supposed to be in work and exactly what you're supposed to be doing while you're there. As far as absenteeism is concerned, it's always a question of giving an adequate reason for your absence, and then also notifying an employer as to your absence so they can make an arrangement to fill in any functions that you aren't able to perform while you're there. So it's people can be absent for various reasons. When we talk about sick leave, obviously linked to that is an employer setting a standard whereby they say that if you're absent because you're sick, you must by a particular time of the day notify somebody where you are, how long you think you'll be absent, and perhaps on your return, depending on how long you're absent, you're required to produce a sick note to motivate the reasons for your absence. So
if the employer has not specified,
yes,
in writing,
yes,
clear guidelines on the issues that you've just listed,
yes,
then who is worse off in that scenario where there's a lack of specificity? Is it the employer?
Yeah, absolutely the employer. Because ultimately we're talking...
Yes.
Yeah, you're safe, Eusebius.
I'll tell you why, because many employers don't specify this stuff, but then they want to DC you, even if just not formally, even if it's just like a sort of casual warning, the basis of what is habit, but habit that hasn't necessarily been documented as this is the standard operating procedure in my industry, right? So if you take, let's take TV and radio. I mean, you know, ideally Abel should be at 6 o'clock in the morning, excited about his 9 o'clock show. And maybe every person that has worked in his job before has always arrived at six.
Yeah.
It's not stipulated in the contract. Then he rocks up at 5 to 9 just in time for the Eusebius McKayser show. But it doesn't say that he must rock up at 6 o'clock in his contract. I wonder whether whether his line manager can then suddenly want to DC him in the absence of having made it formal, written, standard operating procedure that a technical producer must be here 3 hours before.
No, definitely. I mean, what we're dealing with here, absenteeism is a species of misconduct under the Labor Relations Act. Now, I'm only guilty of misconduct if I'm at fault. And in order to be at fault, I must have breached a rule. So who sets the rule? Well, it's the employer who sets the rule. If the employer hasn't set those standards, then the fault lies with them.
Okay, well, give us a call on 011-883-0702. Neil will do his best to answer your questions. And in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. Now, the next practical example of that is I might come on time and be a goody-two-shoes and be the first in the office, but I could become tardy throughout the day, take long lunches, long smoke breaks, for example. Can those be a species of what we're talking about?
Yeah, so some employers try to sort of squeeze that square peg into a round hole. There, you're dealing with what a lot of people refer to as mental absence. I'm at work if I'm sleeping on duty. I think a lot of us are often mentally absent from work, although we are physically present. But really, what you're dealing with there is poor performance. Which requires a different set of procedures in order for it to be addressed under the LRA.
Okay, that makes sense. Tumelo, good morning to you and welcome to the show. You can speak to Neil.
Hello?
Okay, I thought we had mental absence there for a second. Go right ahead, Tumelo.
Hello, how are you?
We've never been better.
That's good. I just want to find out two things. Firstly, when can an employer fairly determine that this employee is abusing sick leave? That's number one. And then number two, what is the procedure when, you know, as an employer, you believe that this employee has deserted his post?
Okay, two very good questions there. Very, very good question. I mean, this thing about sick leave, what is legitimate sick leave? Is it still true? Because I've often heard this say from people who are very good at, as we say, jipooing the system, that if you take one day off work, you don't even need a doctor's note.
Yes. So what the Basic Conditions of Employment Act says is if you're absent on more than one occasion during an 8-week period, you will require a sick note on your return to work in order to be paid for the sick leave. So it goes to whether or not you're entitled to be paid for it. The same applies if you're absent for more than 2 days. You will be required to furnish a sick note to prove your incapacity in respect of the third day that you were absent. So that's what the Basic Conditions of Employment Act
is. Say the first one again for me slowly. So during an 8-week.
If during an 8-week period, you are absent on more than two occasions.
Regardless duration?
Regardless. And then, 2 days.
Two individual days.
Yes, exactly. And the other one is if you're absent for more than 2 days in a row at any time.
Okay, so if for example, I have a massive hangover.
Yes.
And I don't arrive on Monday morning.
Yeah.
And it's the first time in an 8-week cycle that I don't arrive. I can just almost send an email saying that I'm sick. Well, encouraging unethical behavior.
No, yeah, exactly. I'm just not feeling at my best. Let's call it sickness and don't worry about whether or not you're going to pay me under the BCA because you have to because it's only one day. Well, it doesn't work like that because the employer must set that standard. The employer is entitled, in order to be paid for sick leave, you need to actually have been sick. In order to take sick leave, you need to have been sick. So I, as the employer, am entitled to question whether or not you were in fact sick. So even in respect of one day's absence, as an employer, I can set my own standard. And very often you'll find employers do that. The common standard is if you're absent on a Friday, a Monday, or any day after a public holiday, you are required to
I think
produce
that tens of thousands of people listening to this conversation, Neil, who are laboring, pardon the pun, under the assumption that if you are absent for one day, the employer is not entitled to ask for a doctor's note.
No, that's not the case. If the employer set a standard whereby they say that they will, then I'm afraid you are.
Blimey.
So, yeah, employer's entitled to question your bona fides, if you like.
And then I think there was a wonderful second question. I just missed it.
Yeah, no, I caught that. That was regarding the procedure to be followed in the case of a desertion.
Oh, yes. No, I didn't even realize that desertion falls into this, because when I think desertion, I think about soldiers going AWOL in the army.
Well, it's not all that dissimilar. So what desertion is, it's acquired a common law definition, which is you intimate or say expressly something that suggests to me that you have a clear intention not to return to work. So in the law of contract, what that is a repudiation of the contract. So I've said I no longer intend to bind myself or be bound by the terms of our contract together. So the person, the aggrieved party, in this case, the employer, has an election under contract law. What you can do is you can demand specific performance, where I say, sorry about that, you coming to work, I demand it, we have a deal. The other option is to cancel it. Now, your act of canceling the contract is a dismissal. So this is a very important question, because very often what policies will say is if you're absent for 5 days or 7 days, you're automatically deemed to have deserted and your contract will terminate automatically. But if you look at the law of contract and what I've said about your rights in response to a repudiation, that simply doesn't work like that. It's the employer who has an election to terminate the contract, and the contract doesn't, strictly speaking, terminate, albeit that I don't have to pay you for as long as you don't tender your services.
So let's say I just don't pitch for 3 days, no one can find me. What can my boss say on day four, once they've got over the fact that they thought maybe I don't know, I'm dead or in an accident somewhere.
They think you're alive. Yeah.
Until they see me actually having mojitos and I stupidly put photos on Instagram and I'm somewhere in Ibiza. What can they say? That they can't say you have dismissed yourself, so the automatic element doesn't come into it. But what can they say?
So what they can do is to call you to a hearing. So it's effectively a disciplinary hearing to explain the reasons for your absence. And they will say, we believe, unless you come and tell us otherwise, we will have to reasonably assume that you have repudiated your contract. You no longer intend to work, and we will terminate your contract.
All right. And those principles, in terms of how contract and the world of work works, those principles are just what, natural principles? They don't have to be specified in a contract?
No, those are natural common law principles. So every employment relationship has at its center a contract. It's what makes employment law, for me, very interesting. It's fundamentally based on the law of contract and the reciprocal duties and rights between an employer and an employee. And in exercising those rights, this is all common law, common law stuff.
Okay, wow, that's fascinating. Nathan, good morning. Thank you for calling in.
Good morning. So my question is, if one is not one gets paid monthly, and if you're not paid and you remain absent from work, be it a day, 2 days, who is at the wrong, and can you be fired?
Oh, I love that question, Nathan. It's one of my favorite threats to people who don't like paying on time.
Sorry, Nathan, if I just want to make sure that I follow your question correctly. Are you saying, can you be fired if you aren't paid and you don't return to work?
What is the law if one had to walk out or just...
Yeah, let's say I usually get paid on the 25th.
Yeah.
Prime Media doesn't pay me. And I say, oh, well, I'm not going to come until you've paid me. Can they use that as a basis for saying you have deserted your job, come to a DC hearing? And creatives, unfortunately, get treated so badly, Shame. There are many variations of this. Freelance writers who don't get paid, but an editor is expecting them to still file the next week, their next column. And if they don't, I wonder whether, you know, you can be told, oh, well, you haven't filed, therefore I'm going to DC you, or we're going to stop having a relationship, when the basis of you not doing an extra day's work is the fact that, well, you haven't kept your side of the bargain in terms of payment.
Yeah. No, so like we said, it's a reciprocal contract. Both parties have to uphold their end of the bargain. So the employee, if the employer doesn't perform, and the employee's obligation is to pay the employee, and the employee's obligation is to tender their services. Now, if the employee says, well, you haven't paid me on the 25th, and that's my explanation for why I'm not coming anymore. It may be good enough unless the employer has said, well, we've got a payroll issue, and I've experienced this at work recently, not in my own firm, but the client. Thankfully, I've been paid promptly. Where the client wasn't able to pay on the 25th, it was only able to pay on the 26th, and a strike, unprotected strike ensued. And there the employer said, we consulted with your shop stewards. We'd explained to you that there would be a delay. Now, in Nathan's example, I assume there hasn't been such an explanation. The employee may well be within their rights to withhold their services after the non-payment. Albeit that they won't then be paid for any days during which refuse to tender their services. Yeah.
So, okay.
So the reciprocal, rights of the employer, unfortunately, come back to bite you there too.
That's not very cool. So what is the appropriate remedy then? If I don't want my salary the next month to be less the 2 days I didn't go to work because I was fed up, and I still want to be paid, must I just follow the normal course of inquiring and in the meantime work? Probably a practical point, you just go and work.
Yeah, so I mean, I've had a couple of people ask me this question in the past. What do I do? The short answer is stick at it. And if the problem doesn't get resolved, you still have a right to that money because you've earned it. You have a contractual claim to payments of that remuneration, and that claim can be enforced in the labor courts, and also to some extent with the intervention of the Department of Labor. So it's about blowing the whistle on the practice if needs be.
Okay, so keep the moral high ground, and it will serve you well. We'll make it easier for Neil to fight for your right to be paid fully. Philip, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sebas. My question. Under which conditions can an employer pay or not pay someone for temporary disability? For example, if somebody's got a mental illness and they're not able to be at work for like 4 or 5 months, under which conditions can they say, yes, we'll pay you for those months, and no, we can't pay you for those months? I'll listen on the radio for it.
Yep, thanks, Philip. It's a very good question. So when it comes to temporary disability, the starting point here, obviously, is you're entitled to paid sick leave. The Act says you're entitled to an amount of paid sick leave equal to the number of days you work in a 6-week period. Now, it's a hell of a convoluted way of saying if you work 5 days a week, you're entitled to 30 days sick leave. And that applies over a 3-year period, and it doesn't accrue. So it expires at the end of the 3 years. So first what happens is the employee, if the employee exhausts that sick leave due to their temporary disability, they're now in a situation where a couple of things can happen. You can either continue to stay absent and ask to use your annual leave to tide you over while you're absent, or to the extent that you run out of that as well, you obviously need to try and pursue your rights under the Compensation for Occupational Injuries and Diseases Act. That's if your injury or illness arose from something at work, and in that case, the employer is responsible to pay the first 3 months for your absence, and then they are recompensated by the Director General of the Department of Labor. That's in the context of you being injured at work. The difficulty arises where it's not a workplace injury. If it's a depression or something like that, that's not strictly speaking linked to the performance of your duties, then it might be that you're covered under your organization's pension fund, and then there are waiting periods and all sorts of things like that apply there. The catch 22 there, you often find in the cases like this, is where an employee says, I am permanently disabled because of some or other mental illness, and therefore I'm applying to the disability scheme under the pension fund for cover, and you get refused. Now the problem is it's a catch-22 because you've admitted that I'm permanently disabled. So the employer says, thanks very much, that's all the evidence I needed to dismiss you for incapacity, and you haven't got your benefits under the pension fund. So sadly, at some point, unless you have either of those options available to you, you do run out of luck, and then the employer must decide whether they can continue to accommodate you on an unpaid basis and bring you back when you're ready, if it is truly temporary. Alternatively, it's a question of to what extent can the employer reasonably accommodate your absence? At what point does it become unduly onerous for the employer to continue to accommodate your absence from work? And that's pretty much how that works.
Here's a wonderfully South African question for you. See if you can handle this one.
Yes.
Sabu says, UCBS, you know what? What if I become sick for one day? Okay, I've got a doctor's note. I went to a physician or GP on Tuesday. But I just don't feel well on Wednesday. And then I'm not ready to go back. And also don't like, I'm obviously, the medication from the pharmacy didn't help. I then go to my traditional healer. or my employer find grants to fire me. And you know why this matters, Abel? Because even you middle-class blacks, you 702 blacks, you go to traditional healers sometimes first before you go to GPs. And this question often comes up, but we treat it as a joke. And I wonder whether the labor law guides us at all in terms of who is an authority for purposes of furnishing a note to my employer to demonstrate my bona fides.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a good question in the South African context. I saw a stat recently that the World Health Organization published that said 80% of South Africans seek assistance at some point from a traditional healer.
Yes.
So you can imagine the prevalence of the issue.
Yeah.
And what the Basic Conditions of Employment Act says about who can issue a medical certificate, it says any medical practitioner registered with the Health Practitioners Council, so a council registered in terms of the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, traditional healers previously were not part of any council registered in terms of the act. That has changed with the traditional healers, but the traditional health practitioners act, which established the traditional health practitioners council.
Okay.
So that is now established. Now that means that traditional healers can register with the traditional health practitioners council. And once they've registered, they are entitled to issue sick notes, which an employer is obliged to accept, provided they meet the minimum criteria.
Jeez.
And so that's where we are. The problem we've got is from a practical perspective, the traditional health practitioners council, as I understand it, hasn't yet been able to set objective criteria for the assessment of applications for registration. So to decide how and whom to register.
Oh, so maybe they're waiting for guidance from the ancestors.
Yeah, may well be. Yeah.
Sean.
So as soon as that happens,
then we'll know. Sean, how's it?
Hi, Abby.
I hope you're at work. Are you absent?
I'm driving.
Say no more.
Yeah, just a quick one. Say, for example, you start work at 8, but you get there, say, 8:05. When the employer actually disciplines you, is it fair for him to say to you, look, you started at 8, you're supposed to be at 7:45, even though your contract says 8:00, so you are actually 20 minutes late, not just 5 minutes late.
Oh, such a good question.
And in that case, as well, you work through your lunchtime, you don't take lunch. So you're actually catching up that time anyway. They're actually getting an additional 2.5 hours a week out of you. Are they entitled to still discipline you for that?
Yeah, this happened to you this morning, eh?
In the past.
It's a very good question.
Yeah. Sean, so it's a question of, yes, strictly speaking, if you arrive at 8:05 and you're supposed to be there at 8, on a very literal interpretation of your employment contract, you are 5 minutes late for work. And as to whether you're 20 minutes late because your employer had just by the by imposed this 7:45 standard, the unless that's part of your actual employment contract, it can't be imposed and it can't be held against you. So really, all the employer could in theory discipline you therefore is the 5 minutes lateness. But to be honest, the employer needs to be fair and reasonable. And if you have some explanation for why you're 5 minutes late, I mean, the traffic is...
Neil, are the other bodies in law that adjudicate disputes at the point at which the marriage becomes almost irretrievable, are they commonsensical about this? So for example, as a radio host, I can't be 10 minutes late because there's going to be dead air from 9 to 9:10.
Yeah.
But if you have a job where the productivity and the KPI isn't fundamentally affected by the starting point and you work through lunch, would that be taken into account by some dispute resolution arbiter?
So you're eliciting the worst response you can get from a lawyer from me now, which is it really depends on the circumstances. But you're quite right. It always depends on the degree of lateness, the nature of the job, the importance of the responsibilities, the impact on the organization will all be taken into account. Your 5 minutes lateness, in most circumstances is very likely to have those sorts of effects.
Yeah.
And to discipline you for that, even to issue a verbal warning might be unfair. To take it any further than that, particularly given that absenteeism is addressed on a progressive discipline basis. Okay. One doesn't normally hop immediately to a final written warning or a dismissal unless the absence has been particularly...
Two quick bonus questions because I can't get enough of you. We're a little bit late, so just keep them very quick. Number one, when I have a doctor's note, is it compulsory for the doctor to say the nature of my illness or just this person is given permission to be off work?
No, so it's not at all compulsory for the doctor to disclose the nature of the illness in his diagnosis. or her diagnosis.
So the employer can't demand to know.
The employer can't demand unless your employment contract specifically says that you consent to informing the employer of your of the exact diagnosis, or in those particular circumstances, you say, look, I'm happy to tell you.
But second question, if I want to go to the doctor right now, I leave the premises for a couple of hours, I'm in the waiting room for a long time, my employer gets pissed off, but that's just the nature of things, and I really had a headache, and we all agreed that I should go. Can I be regarded as absent, or if I'd chronicle the facts, will I be able to come to you and we can show the middle finger to the employee for being too harsh?
Well, you'll certainly be absent, but it sounds like you're going to have a reasonable justification for it once you get your sick note from the doctor. And the sick note must, of course, it must specify that you were incapacitated for the full period of your absence. And as soon as it does that, you're in the clear.
I have never enjoyed talking labor law this much. Make it so much fun.
Enjoyed it very much.
Usually the part of laws in undergrad that I hated the most.
Is that so?
Yeah, but you've just, I want to speak to you for 2 hours. Well, what's your website?
Our website is www.faskin.com.
And that's Neil Searle. Hopefully you don't need him, but he reminds me of a good doctor that makes you want to be ill just to be in counseling with him. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.